Morning. Today's daf by Mesias Kuf Hey. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is only Zichron Ishmael Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We're in the very top of Kuf Dalam and Beis. First line of Kuf Dalam and Beis, a Gemara continuation from yesterday. In that, yesterday we talked about how sometimes the contracts that are written by you and I speak to ideas that are really embedded in the Chachamim. So the way the Gemara phrases this is Dorish Lashon Hedya. We were Darshan Lashon Hedya. The people, way people write up contracts, there's something to be said about what people know. And when I say people, I mean Jewish people. I mean, we have a basically a built-in understanding, intuitive nature of Torah. And so therefore, if you just look at the contracts that we write, so you'll see that there's Chachamim, Chachmas Chachamim in our Shtari Hedyot. So we gave four examples yesterday of such. We're not going to go over the four right now. Go back over yesterday's daf. But now we're going to go on the top of Kuf Dalam and Beis, and the Gemara is going to give a fifth example. So Rabbi Yossi, Ayadorish Lashon Hedyot, Detayin, so Rabbi Yossi would give his own example, and that was as follows. Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Machmish, Nagu, Lassus, Ksuva, Milva, Gova, Milva. So in a place where they made the Ksuva, a Milva, a loan, so Gova, Milva, so you treat it like a loan. And what does this mean? So Rashi explains. I'm going to paraphrase Rashi. So we go over this time and again. It's one of the basic ideas in terms of a ksuva and the financial structure of a woman when she gets into a marriage. And that is that her possessions go into the marriage in one of two ways. Either it's what's called nichse malug or it's nichse tzon barzel. So nichse malug is not what we're talking about right now. Nichse malug is when she goes into the property. She retains principal ownership of the property and the payros are going to be enjoyed by her husband. But that's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about Nechse Tzon Barzel. Nechse Tzon Barzel is basically more like the dowry, where when the woman gets married, so her father is going to invest into the marriage by basically sinking money into the marriage, kickstart the marriage. So the and this money or assets, whatever, whichever one it is going to be appraised. Let's assume it's assets. It's going to be appraised at the time of the chasna, and that appraisal is going to be written into the ksuva. Now, that means then that the husband's going to be receiving this as assets, and then, upon death or divorce of the husband, so then what's going to end up happening is that the estate or the husband or the ex-husband is going to be then giving the money, sending the money back to the woman as per the appraised price written into the ksuva, regardless of whatever happens to the assets. In other words, he's perfectly, totally responsible for the full value of it as it was written into the ksuva. And this is what we refer to as nechse tzon barzel. Tzon barzel, iron sheet, because it's strong. Meaning regardless of whatever happens to it, the husband is going to be responsible. Another way to look at all this is basically it's a milvah, it's a loan, meaning hopefully it's a loan that's never going to be collected, but it's going to go in one direction, it's going to go back in the other direction, it's going to go to the husband, and then its full value is going to be then sent back to the wife in the event of death or divorce. And that's why another way to look at Nechse Tzon Barzel is it's a milvah, it's really a loan. So the Gemara says, so Rabbi Yossi Omer, Makom Shenagu Gulasos Ksuva Milvah Gova Milvah. So now, Lichbol Gova Mechza. Now, they had an unusual custom back then, which I don't think continues to this very day, at least I know in our circles it doesn't continue, and that is that when you wrote the ksuva, so sometimes it was written with exaggeration, right? The basically, as Rashi says over here, is basically a shout out to the kala. In other words, she's worth 400. And meanwhile, the ksuva, the real ksuva, is only 200. Okay, so basically, as a cover to the kala, so you wrote twice the amount of the actual dowry into the ksuva. But everyone knew this; everyone understood this. So, in the event that that there's kfela, that there is an exaggeration of what the dowry is. So in other words, instead of it being 200, so let's say the dowry was 400, again, stated 400. So stated 400 means it's understood it's 200. So that means that, again, everyone knows this kind of exaggeration exists. And so therefore, when you're looking at the ksuva and you see 400, so you know it's 200, so it's 200 in the direction of the husband, and then eventually 200 in the direction back. Now, Avlai Gavutilsa, now Avlai would only take a a third, meaning that their exaggeration was such that there was only a third of the stated amount that was actually transferred. Meremar Magabe Nami Shvacha. Now, Meremar would collect the actual Shvach, meaning there was a hyperinflation of the, an exaggeration of the Ksuva amount, and Meremar collected the entire amount. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we just learned together in the Braisa that under these circumstances where it was kfela, where it was doubled, we all know it was doubled, and you therefore only collect half of that. So the Gemara says, yeah, and I'll tell you where the distinction lies. The distinction lies in whether or not you did a kinyan seder, meaning that if we're going to go with the standard exaggeration, so and there's no kinyan on that. So in other words, the number does not represent the actual ksuva, and we all know that. And we all know that basically just as a shout out to the kala, so we're going to, even though it's really 200, we're going to say 400. We're going to even write ksuva in the ksuva 400, but we all understand it's really 200. However, if the number was written 400 and we did a kinyan seder on that 400, so then we don't assume that's exaggeration. We assume that that was intentional and literal, and therefore we collect. And the Gemara says, and that's the difference. Ravina Mishabech v'kasev labarte amarlei. So Ravina would mishabech. He would, again, exaggerate when he was writing the ksuva for his very own daughter. In other words, giving the dowry to his own daughter. And, again, he would guzma. He would give an exaggeration of how much it actually was. So Amrulay, so they said to him, nickname me Neymar, you want to shake on it? Now, I don't really mean shake on it, but in other words, you want to do a kinyan siddur, which means that do we take the number that you say literally? So Amrulahu, imakna lo mechbal, imechbal lo mikne. So Maremar said, he says, look, I'm not, no. The, I'm sorry, Ravina. Ravina says no. He says, look, if we're going to make a kinyan, so then and we're talking literally, so I'm going to put the actual number in. If we're not going to make a kinyan and we're not talking literally, so then I'm going to put the exaggerated amount in. But no, I'm not going to do both. I'm not going to exaggerate the number and make a kinyan on that. Thank you, but no thank you. Okay. How gavra damar lahu, and then we're just finishing up with one more story on this issue of exaggeration of ksuva. So there was this man, damar lahu, that he said the following. Now Rashi points out over here was Misava Machmas Misa. Unfortunately, the man was dying, and unfortunately, he was also marrying off his daughter. Well, that part's good, but in other words, it was bittersweet. So he was going to now direct a certain amount of his estate to his daughter for her dowry. And his statement went like this: Havula arba meazuza lebarte biksuvasa. So he said 400 zuz. So that's how much of the dowry is that he pledged. And of course, the question was when he gave the number. So now, unfortunately, there's room for ambiguity because, as we've just learned together, so there's a certain assumed exaggeration that goes into the ksuva, and sometimes kfela, sometimes it's twice the amount. So when he said 400. So did he mean 400 or did he mean 200? And we understand now that there's that kind of ambiguity. So Shalach Ravacha Berederav Avya Lekameh Deravashi Arba Me'ah De'inon Tamne Me'ah O Arba Me'ah Zuzan De'inon Masayim. So at what did he mean by 400? Was the 400 the actual number? Which means that we should be writing into the Ksuva 800, which reflects 400 real dinarim that are going to go into the ksuva, or no? Or maybe his 400 was the actual exaggerated number, but the actual amount of the estate that's going to head towards his daughter is going to be 200, and that's obviously the question. So I'm Ravashi Chazina. So Ravashi says, well, I think we're going to be medayik in the Lashon, and we'll look as follows. I amar havula. So if he said the word havula, which, by the way, if you go back to his actual statement, that's what he said. He said havula. So if he said havula, so arba meazuza di'inon tamne mea. So that means that he actually wanted the transfer 400, which means that we're going to write into the ksuva 800. And I amar ksuvula. And if his language was, I want you to write into the ksuva 400, so that means arba meazuza di'inon masan. So that means that he wanted 400 to be written, but in other words, that represented only 200 real, actual money being transferred over to his daughter as a dowry. Okay, so that's one way that he set it up.
If he was a Kohenus, okay, then the 400 is a real 400.
Maybe, but Gemara doesn't take that into consideration, but yeah, I hear you. Now, Ikadarmi, Amar Avashi, Chazina, Niyama, Liksuvasa. Now, in the second version of Ravashi's response, so he's medaik on the word ksuva. If he says Liksuvasa, so then Arba Mea Zuzi Di'inon Tamne Mea. So, in other words, Li means on four, or on behalf of the ksuva, meaning this is I want the ksuva to represent. So, in other words, this 400 means the actual money, which means that we're going to write 800. And if he amar big ksuva saw, but if he says it with a base, meaning this is what I want the number to be in the ksuva to be, so then arba meyazuz din masayin. So that means that he wants 400 to be written into the ksuva, which again, that as per the minhag back then, the chasan is only going to be entitled to 200. 400 was just going to be the written amount. Okay. And then on both of these points, the Gemara says, Velohi. Now the Gemara says, now really, in the case under discussion, where the father who's dying, who instructed 400 zuz to go to his wife's, to his daughter's dowry, so the Gemara says, really, all this is not the critical issue. Lo shan da'amar liksuvasa, v'lo shan da'amar biksuvasa, doesn't matter if he opened up the word with a lamed or with a base, it really doesn't matter. Arba meyazuzi di inon masayin ad amar havelei stama. Once he uses the word ksuva, so then you know that that is just simply the hyper exaggerated term that's used for ksuva. And so whatever number he says is really, in terms of real numbers, is going to be halved. And if he just simply said the word havela without introducing the word ksuva into the discussion, so then and only then is the number going to be the real number. But once he uses ksuva as part of the discussion, regardless of what prefix he uses before the word ksuva, so then he really meant just half of the number that he stated.
What happens if the money depreciates?
In other words, that's why it's called Sarim Barzal. In other words, whatever number is put into the ksuva, so that is
that's it.
That's the number she's going to be recouping. Now, by the way, I missed a very basic point, which we're going to go back to right now, and that is, remember, the context of all this was Lashon Hedyot, meaning this is a way of how we're deriving it. Now, if you remember yesterday's daf, so we gave four examples in the second half of yesterday's Amud, right? Kuf Dal Amud Aleph, the second half, right after the Mishnah, Gemara started off with 1, 2, 3, and 4, so every time we quoted a line from the Shtar, which basically led us to this conclusion. Oddly enough, over here, the Gemara doesn't even quote the Shtar Ksuva. It assumes that we know it. Okay, so let's assume we don't know it. So Rashi over here quotes it. Second Rashi. Second Rashi, Makam Shanagulasus Ksuva Milva. Shekoma Shekosu Bishtar Ksuva Sa, and here is the line of the Ksuva that we're darshaning. Okay, I guess that the when the Gemara was being written, published, edited, so I guess this was so familiar to people that the Gemara just assumed we all knew it. But anyway, Rashi quotes it. V'dinadunya dahanas lei mi beinashu labeis ba'ala. The nadunya, the dowry, that is being given over from the house of the father, meaning her father, labei ba'ala, to that of the husband. And again, there's more to the ksuva, and don't ask me because I'm not that familiar with the Lashon Ksuva, and certainly not the Lashon Ksuva back then. But basically, in the statement of the ksuva, it sounds like it's going to be a reciprocal, where it's going to be given over from the father to the husband, and then in the event of death or divorce, it's going to be given back over to her. So again, that reciprocity sounds like a milva, which is the point that the Gemara was making over here. Okay. Ad Khan, that takes us now to the end of that discussion. We are back to discussing Schirus, the working of a field, and specifically Arisus and Chakirus. So let's go back over what we said yesterday as we began the ninth parak of the Masech. We talked about working a land, and there's two ways that you can work a land, either by sharecropping or by tenant farming. Okay, I learned a new word yesterday. Good for me. So so sharecropping means that I'm going to be working somebody's land and we're going to be dividing the profits evenly between me and the owner of the property. Now, I don't mean evenly. I mean prorated percentage and whatever the common percentage was at the time. Sometimes it's half, sometimes a third, sometimes a quarter. Minagamakam determine exactly what the percentage would be. And that's a resource. And then there's chakirus. Chakirus is tenant farming, where I'm going to be working the land and it is a fixed amount in terms of how much I'm going to be giving the owner, regardless of how much I actually perform for myself or from the land. So it's going to be a fixed amount. So the owner of the property is going to be receiving a fixed amount, regardless of my performance. Okay. So those are two ways to operate. Now, as we already pointed out in the from the beginning of the perek, so Mishnayos 1 and 2 of our perek are talking about both arisus. Now, the other term that's used for arisus is kablanos. So those terms are interchangeable, right? In our context, in our discussion, kablanos and arisus are synonymous. So the Mishnayos 1 and 2 are talking both about an aris and a choker, okay? Both by sharecropping and tenant farming. From that point going forward, and we already saw yesterday the first Mishnah, the one on Kuf Dalamad Aleph. So from Mishnah 3 and on, so we have the statement of Rav Papa, which we have to keep remembering in this parak, and that is that yesh v'yesh. In other words, some Mishnahs coming forward now are going to be talking about a choker, some are going to be talking about an aris, but no Mishnah from this point going forward, or I should say from yesterday going forward, is going to be talking about both. Okay. Now, in the Gemara, we're starting right in the middle of Kuf Dalamud Beis, back to the topic of an Aris. Ha'ugavar dekaba Arim Echaveh, so there's a person who accepted to work the land of his friend, an Amar, and he said it as follows, if I let's say lay the land fallow, I'm going to pay you 1,000 zuz. Now, I mentioned this yesterday, and contrast that to the Mishnah. Now, in the Mishnah, we learned yesterday where he made the following contingency statement. If I leave the land fallow, I'm going to pay you meitav. I'm going to pay you meitava. We're going to figure out how much the land would normally produce, an average yield of this land, and I'll give you the percentage of that. And we learned in the Mishnah, he's on the hook, meaning his whole purpose this year, this season, is to farm the land and to raise crop. And if he just fails to do so, so then the owner is just left there with, there was a guy that was supposed to work my land, and for whatever reason he didn't. And so that contingency that we learned yesterday's Mishnah is going to be honored. And he's going to have to pay the owner in the event of failure of performance. Here, however, he's not going to have to pay. And the reason why, the Gemara is going to spell out in just a moment. So he says, Imovrana, if I let the land lay fallow, Imovrana la, Yavina lach alfazus, I'm going to give you 1,000 zuz. So over Tilsa, so let's say now the year was over, the season was over, and 2/3 of the land he worked, and 1/3 of the land he just laid fallow. Okay, just whatever, failure. So Amri Nahardai, so they said in Ardai, Dino Hudiyai of Lay Tlas Meav Atelsa Vatilsa Vatilsa. So now he says, look at what he wrote as a contingency before working the land. Failure to work the land, he says, I'm going to penalize myself 1,000 zuz. That's a lot of money. I don't know how to put that in our terms, but it's a lot of money. So he failed to work 1/3 of the land, so his penalty was 1,000, so we'll prorate. And we'll just simply say now he's on the hook to having to pay 3,333 zuzim and 1/3 for failure. So the Gemara says, so that's what the Nahardai, the Yeshiva Nahardai thought should be his penalty. Rav Amar Asmachti of Asmachta Lokanya. Now Rav says, no. This is an Asmachta, meaning his contingency that he laid out in front falls under the category of Asmachta, and so therefore he was not, it's a non-binding commitment that he made. Now, Rav Amar Asmachti of Asmachta Lokanya. Now Rav Amar, so the Gemara says, wait 1 second. We just, on the Amud Aleph of yesterday's daf, learned about contingency, and in the Mishnah we said that it is a binding contingency, and it is a binding commitment. So what's the difference between the Amud Aleph and the Amud Beis, what we're doing right now? So the Gemara says, Hasam loka gazim hacha kevin dekamar milsa yisei rasa guzma ba'amahu dekagazim. So the Gemara says, well, you have to look at what is in the penalty of the contingency. If the penalty of the contingency is a fair representation of loss, so then it's binding. If the penalty of the contingency is really an exaggeration, so it's just hyperbole, it's just simply exaggerated talk, and it's not binding. Gemara says that's the difference.
He did make a kinyan.
Hmm?
There was no kinyan.
And even if there was, meaning if it's exaggeration, seemingly even if there's a kinyan. The Gemara doesn't say that, but okay, and I'm not sure if I'm right. Okay. Okay, there was a person who accepted to work a land, and he and the agreement that he made with the owner of the land is that he was going to plant sesame seeds. Okay. Now, sesame seeds, again, you can't really come to me for really agricultural information. I'm not here to tell you what is in fact so, because I have no experience whatsoever. So I'm asking for forgiveness. But this is from the way Rashi's presenting it, this is the way it seems to work out. When you plant sesame seeds, so it normally fetches a higher price in the market, but it does a job on the land, meaning the land is going to suffer, so to say, with the sesame seed crop that was planted and harvested. Okay. And then what the sharecropper did is he made an executive decision. Now, I don't know if he has the right to make this executive decision. It's not clear from the Gemara if he can make these executive decisions, but he did. And instead of planting sesame seeds, he planted wheat. Wheat normally does not fetch as high a price, but it's a little bit it's a little bit easier on the land. And again, I'm not saying this because I know. That's the way the Gemara seems to be presenting this. Okay, so Avda chiti kishum shemei. And then, lo and behold, so after having made this executive decision, the sharecropper, turns out that he did well. In fact, the wheat that he yielded from the season actually came out to what the average sesame crop would have gone anyway. So here's basically what he did. He took a risk. Instead of planting the sesame seeds, he planted the wheat. And lo and behold, there was no loss. So in other words, the profit was going to be the same from the wheat that it was from the sesame seed. Now, So Rav Kahana thought the following. Can't the sharecropper go out to the landowner and say the following? Look what I did for you. I basically got you your profit that you expected, and I made it easier on the land. The land did not suffer as much. So you know what? I should get a bonus. Okay? So, Amar le Rav Ashi le Rav Kahana. So Rav Ashi says to Rav Kahana, I dismiss that argument. Amar inshe, people say, Chasha arav alalichesh mara. As far as my property is concerned, let my property suffer. Let my profits not suffer. Meaning, people are ready to sacrifice their property for profit. And so, if you would have asked the owner at the time, well, what should I do? Should I do wheat? Should I do sesame seed? So he'll say every single time, no, you do the sesame seed. Meaning, I care about my profit much more than I care about the land. Now, I understand the land is what's producing the profit. That part's understood. But basically, yes, he made an executive decision. Again, the Gemara does not voice opinion about whether he can make it. But if you asked the owner and you would have said, what should I do? The owner would have said, for sure, I would have preferred sesame seed. I would have preferred the profit. The fact that you took a risk and that you planted wheat and you made it easier on me, okay, but that doesn't mean you're going to get a bonus. As far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't have told you to have done that. Next. How gavra dekabai ara l'shem shemei? Again, starting off the same point where the sharecropper agreed with the owner to plant sesame seed and zarechite, and again, the sharecropper made an executive decision and he planted wheat. Avdechite tfei min shum shemei. And then lo and behold, what happened was that it actually produced more profit, and that was really a bumper. It was a total surprise. And so now, once again, Ravina says, I think what we should do under these circumstances is basically look towards the sharecropper and give him the bonus. Meaning that had he planted sesame seeds, he would have gotten X. Now that he planted the wheat, turns out that it was X plus whatever that was the bonus was. Split. And so therefore that bonus should be split between the sharecropper and the owner, and basically the sharecropper should get a bonus. So Amalei Rav Acha, Medifti LeRavina Atu Hu Ashbach Ara Lo Ashbacha. And again, Rav Acha Medifti rejects this argument as well. Now, you want to give the sharecropper that credit, that's fine, but you can't ignore the fact that the land was the one that was the item that actually produced the crop, and the land is owned by the owner. So, when all is said and done, it's still a joint venture. Think of those words, and just because that really brings us to the next Gemara. It really is a joint venture between the sharecropper and the owner, and so therefore, all profits are going to be split evenly or as per the contract.
And to get his bonus. What type of bonus is the Gemara suggesting?
The Gemara is suggesting that whatever extra he gets should be split irrespective of whatever the contract was. So if the contract was that he only gets a third, so then on the extra, he should get 50% of that. Okay.
In the first case, he could have used the same argument.
Okay, yes. In other words, right. This argument could have been true in the previous case as well. Yeah. So, Aralo Ashbacha, fine. Okay. And that brings us now to the end of the sharecropping for now. We're going to come back to that later. And here we go now from this point going forward, from here until the next mission, which is coming up in the middle of the Amud, we head back to the fifth parak of Bamitzia, the parak Ezun Neshech. Okay, so just as a quick a quick reminder of what we did earlier. We, in the fifth parak, talked a lot about the problem of ribbis. The problem of ribbis is that's not a problem. Let me describe it a little bit better. It's an issur in the Torah, so that I can't charge interest to another Jew. And so every time I lend the money, so I can only collect the principal, not the interest. Okay? And we spent a lot of time in the fifth parak, 15 blot, 2 weeks of Daf Yomi, discussing this issue. And one of the things that came up a number of times throughout the fifth parak is this idea of doing a joint venture. And that's why, by the way, the Gemara transitions from this discussion to now our discussion. Doing a joint venture with somebody, where basically what I'm going to do is that I'm going to basically venture. I'm going to fund somebody. I'm going to provide capital. He's going to take my capital and he's going to try to make a business out of it. He's going to try to make money. And basically, every time we construct this kind of arrangement, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to divide the capital into two parts. Two halves. Half of it is going to be a loan and the other half is going to be a pikadon. So now consider, every time I'm giving somebody merchandise, so half is a loan, half is a pikadon, so that means really that half of it is his, half of it's mine. Why do we do that? The Gemara here is going to say, it's kind of odd that this Gemara really belongs back in the fifth parak. Okay, but I'm not the publisher. And I'm sure there's Chachmas, Ravina, Ravashi, why the Gemara is over here. Okay, but the reason why it's constructed, the way the business is constructed that way, is because from the managing partner of this business, so consider the fact that it's a risky business. He's got to travel with the merchandise, and there's a good chance of loss. And so if he is totally exposed, so he has a chance of losing 100% of the venture. We want to be nicer and kinder to the managing partner. So therefore, what we do is we basically say half of it is yours, half of it is the owner's, so that basically he's going to minimize his risk. The most that he can actually lose in such a venture now is only going to be 50%, not 100%. That is why the construct of this kind of business structure is 50-50. Okay, now let's consider the following. Okay, and just a simple example of, let's say it's $100 now of merchandise that's being given from the venture capitalist over to the managing partner, and the managing partner goes and he does business with it. So if now it is viewed as half loan and half picadon, so now let's consider. So now let's say he makes a profit, he turns a profit. So on the half loan, so remember, that was all... That all belongs to the owner. So what he's going to do is he's going to come back and he's going to pay the owner the principal of the loan. Okay, on the portion that is now half picadon, so what he's going to do is he's going to split the profits. So let's say instead of 100, he made 120. So now what he's going to do is 50 is going to go back to the owner, to the venture capitalist. And then of the remaining now 70, so 50 of it is a picadon. So that also is going to be returned. And the other 20 now is going to be divided between him and the owner. So they're splitting the profits. Okay. Here's the problem which we discussed back in Ezun Eshech, which we're going to have to raise again right now in order to understand the upcoming Gemara. Basically now, even though the loan was given and paid back in full, but there really is the following to take into consideration. You just made money off the back of the loan. Now, what we mean by that is as follows, is that, yes, it's true, you borrowed 50 and you paid back 50. And that in of itself, if we could just look at that in a vacuum, that's fine, that's very good. But at the same time, however, you took that money together with the other monies, and you made money with that. Now, what did you gain as a fee? So if all you did is just split the profits, the answer is you gained nothing in terms of a fee. So you basically took money from somebody, handed it back to somebody. Normally there would have been a fee. You're, in theory, waiving the fee. So basically now, what the lender got was on the loan side of the venture, is he gave 50, he got back 50, and he also got an additional benefit, because normally he would have to pay a fee, and if he didn't, so that's an additional benefit that he received in addition to his loan. And that smacks of interest. So what we learned back in Ezun Eshech is that you, the venture capitalist, need to add on a fee. Now, how was this added fee tacked on? So we learned back in Ezer Neshech a number of different ways. There's not one way in which the capitalist should be adding on a fee. For this morning, what we are going to look at is that the capitalist himself is going to be dividing the profits, not 50-50, but one-third, two-third. And by doing that, meaning he's only going to keep one-third for himself, and two-thirds will go to the managing partner. And by doing that now, that extra bit is going to represent the fee to mitigate the possible issue of interest. Okay. So far, so good. That is all just our setup to understand the Gemara coming up. How Gavra? Amri Nahardai. Thank you. Amri Nahardai. How iska palga milva palga pikadon? Okay, so when you're dealing with an iska, again, this is now for us basically what I just went over, but the Gemara is not going to say it. So when you're dealing with an iska, so half of it's a loan and half of it's a pikadon. Avad rabbanan milsa denicha leilu lova, and we're doing something to be gentler, to be nicer to the lova. Lova over here is the managing partner, right? He's called the lova because obviously half of that merchandise is going to have to be repaid back, so we get to call him a lova. Okay, but from our perspective, he's the managing partner. Venicha leila milva, and it's also going to be good for the milva as well. So hasha damina paga milva, and so now, let's take a look at the actual venture itself, the actual capital itself. So, again, just in my example, so let's say $100 is now given as venture capital to the managing partner. And so the way it's constructed, the way the Chachamim designed it, is that half of it is a loan and half of it is a pikadon. So now, on the half that's a pikadon, it's not your money. Okay, you're managing, but it's not your money. Fine. Obviously, you can't touch that. But on the half that's a loan, can't we make the argument, which the Gemara is about to do, that it's yours? Now, obviously, it was given to you with a very specific purpose, and that is to make money with it. But since the Chachamim called it a loan, can't we say from the managing partner standpoint, basically it's his and he can do whatever he wants with it? And that's what the Gemara now is going to try to argue. So, So let's say, while en route to wherever he's going, so the merchandise happens to have been beer, and he's thirsty, so you know what? Okay, so he'll drink some of the merchandise. Not obviously the half that's a pikadon that doesn't belong to him, but the half that is his the half that's a loan. It's his. Obviously he has a chov, he has to pay it back, but it's his. So Rava Amar, so Rava says no. Yes, it's true. The Chachamim called it chatzi pikadon, chatzi milva. That's true. But la'achi karile iska. But overall, it's all earmarked. It's all referred to as iska. It is the capital meant for investment purposes, for money-making purposes. I gave it to you for the purpose of business. This is capital. What we want done with capital is that we want it to make money, not for you to drink it. And yes, from a liability standpoint, we'll call half of it a loan and half of it a pikadon. And so therefore, your losses will not exceed a half of the actual merchandise itself. But that was done to protect you. But this is now Rava's counter-argument, let's not lose sight of the fact that the whole thing is really an instrument of business, and therefore do not touch it. Now, v'lo l'mishte b'shichra, and you can't drink from it. Okay.
Why is there a discussion of purpose, that if it's Israel?
Huh?
Why is there
because by virtue of the fact now that the Chachamim called half of it a loan, so now that is treated halachically like a loan. Now, yes, what Rav is doing is he's limiting its status of a loan. I agree with you on that point. Meaning by virtue of the fact that Rav says you can't drink it, so, you know, on a normal loan, when you give me money, I can do whatever I want with it. And when you lend me goods, I can do whatever I want with it. But in this regard, it's a loan, but with limit. It's a limited loan. Okay. Amar Rav Idi Baravin ve'im meis nasa metaltan leitzalbanav. Now, Rav Idi Baravin says, now, let's say the managing partner dies. while having the merchandise on hand. Okay, now, so that means now that it's going to go to his children. Now, what's going to go to his children? So the half that's a pikadon, obviously, no. In other words, he's just a custodian on half, and that obviously goes back to the owner. But on the half that's a loan, so now, again, when you borrow something, it's yours. Obviously, with an obligation to pay back, but in the interim, it's yours. And so, therefore, when you die, that means it goes to your children. Now, if it goes to your children, so do the children have an obligation to pay? Depends. And what does it really depend on? Assets versus movables versus property. Meaning, metatlin are not meshuba to be paid back. Only karka has a shibud. And so, therefore, if there was karka, so then that would secure the obligation. But if there's no karka, so then this is an unsecured loan that is being now given over to the children, and so they don't have an obligation to pay back. So, metaltan leitzobanov. So, once again, Rava, and this is Rava consistent with his previous point, Rava amar lahachikar le iska. Again, to use the term milva by itself does not really accurately define what it is. It's not just a loan. It's a loan earmarked for the purposes of business. And therefore, the imeis lo yaseh metaltan etzavanav. And that means that if he dies, it is not going to be considered metaltan regarding the children. And I'm going to turn our attention to Rashi. Rashi writes over here, Lahachi Karile Iska, Shite Kayemis Tamina Misasik Bar Rashi. Sorry, let me just let me point everyone in the right direction. Four or five, six lines after lines get wide. Rashi writes, Lahachi Karile Iska, Shite Kayemis Tamina Misasik Ba, Vismichwala Ba Leha. Meaning that because it's an Iska, because it's a business, meaning yes, from the standpoint of liability, we're calling it a loan. But really, the venture capitalist knows that that money is his, and he knows it's there. Shalot tinasin lo tziyah. It's not meant to be spent frivolously. V'imeis loveh, yigbeh v'lo te'aseh kimetaltan shalahem. And if the managing partner dies, that money is not just simply a loan, which is his, which is then going to go to his children. De'kevin t'stricha lios kayemes, because really, it's earmarked for business. And so, therefore, that money should be sustained for business. So, smichtu aleha. So, therefore, the funder of this always has his mind on it, and it's kimikarke. And even though it's obviously not property, but halachically we're going to treat it like property. The time of the loka mishtab imetat liyas malabachov mishum demikar lav alayu samach delav lemigbe minayu uzfe. When you lend money in general, the reason why you don't look at the money itself as a means of repayment is because you know the money's going to be spent and you know the money's going to be gone. Sharabiyad alahotzian. Because whenever you lend money in general, the whole purpose of a loan is to be spent. Avahani, but over here, once again, it's a loan, but it's earmarked for business. Avahani ein biyad alahotzian v'samachalayu. You don't have the means in which, the right in which to just simply do whatever you want with it. It's earmarked for business, and therefore, the funder can expect that money to be paid back for him, even though it is not in the form of karka. Okay. Back to the Gemara. Okay. So, Nasa Gemara. Okay, fine. Sorry, last line. Amar Rava. Chad iska v'trei shtari pseida de milva. If I have one business venture, but reflect it in two contracts, so that's going to be a loss to the milva, a loss to the lender. Lender over here meaning the funder, right? The venture capitalist. Okay, so let's illustrate this. I'm going to use Rashi as my guide in terms of an illustration of this basic idea. Now remember what I told you from the beginning. When you put together an ISCA contract, so the funder now is going to be giving, let's say in this case $100, and in that contract it's going to be articulated that 50% of it is a loan and 50% of it is a pikadon. Doesn't have to be money, by the way. It could be merchandise, just simply appraised at that money. Now, in terms of loss, where are we going to go on the loss? 50-50. We're splitting the loss 50-50. Okay. So that means that anything, in other words, if he goes out and instead of making money, he loses money. So let's say that 100 turns into 80. So the loss is going to be split 50% for each partner, the managing partner and the funder. And so therefore, each one of them is going to be getting back 40. If there is gain and profit, so remember what I told you at the beginning of this. So normally, under normal circumstances, so the profit should also be split 50-50. But because of the ribbis consideration, so therefore the managing partner is going to get 2/3 and the funder is going to get 1/3. So that now means as follows. And again, I'm going to follow Rashi's example. So let's say now it was $100 worth of merchandise that was used, and it was, let's say, two different types of merchandise, each one 50. But it was written up into one contract. But on one set of 50, let's say there was a loss of 5, and on the other 50, there was a gain of 15. Or to put it simply, a net gain of 10. If all this was rolled into one contract, so that now is great. But great for whom? Great now for the managing partner. Because the managing partner now is going to be receiving two-thirds of the gain. If the net gain is 10, so he's going to be receiving 6 2/3, and the capitalist is going to be receiving 3 1/3. Okay. Now let's do this another way. Let's say that, again, same merchandise, 100, but 2 units of 50, and let's say the 2 units of 50, each a contract was written, an ISCA contract was written on each 50. So, and again, on one there was a gain of 15, on the other one there was a loss of 5. So now, let's follow through with what's going to happen now. So on the gain of 15, so now the profit's going to be split 10 and 5, 2/3 1/3. On the loss of 5, so that's going to be divided 50-50, that loss. So that's 2.5. So now, you have from the perspective of the milva, a gain only of 5 on one, and a loss of 2.5 on the other. So for him, his net gain is going to be 2.5. So if it was rolled up into one contract, he would have walked away from the entire venture with 3 1/3. But if it's split into two, his net gain is only going to be 2.5. So it's better from the Malva's perspective to put together the entire merchandise into one contract rather than divide into two. Good. So Chana Iska v'Trei Shtari Pseida de Milva. Trei Iska v'Chad Shtara Pseida de Lova. And if it is two Iskas but one contract, so that's going to be a loss for the Lova. Basically everything we just said, but now if it's, let's say, actually two different merchandises, but it's rolled into one contract, so then that would be a Pseida for the Lova, because the Lova is the one who is going to be sharing the 50% burden of loss, as opposed to the gain in which he gets 66%. V'amarava haiman dekabel iska min chavre upasid. Okay, sorry, period. Okay. So that takes us through the iska relationship between the capitalist and the managing partner. And the Gemara, again, over here is not so much condemning one over the other. The Gemara is just basically pointing out, these are the real profits and the real losses that are going to be gained and lost in this kind of business structure. So basically, the Gemara is not talking here in terms of Issa v'Heter. The Gemara is just simply saying, just in other words, from the perspective of the venture, the capitalist, and from the perspective of the managing partner, just in other words, everyone needs to be aware that the loss is 50-50, the gain is 1/3, 2/3, and so therefore, when writing up the contracts, be aware of this, and I guess be fair, if you will. Amar Rav, we're now on the very top of Kofei Amad Aleph. The Gemara continues. Let's say a person, the managing partner, starts off on pretty much a sour note. Right? He starts doing business with the venture, with the merchandise that's given to him, and he starts losing. Okay, so, and he doesn't let the funder know this. Basically, I'll get myself out of this hole. And the managing partner works and works and works to get himself back to where he started. Good. So, Haiman de Kabbal Iskam and Chavre Upasid. So, first he loses. Tarech Umalye. And he works hard and he gets back to basically the starting point. Velo Odia. And he never told the funder this because, quite frankly, he was a little bit embarrassed that he lost his first business move was that of a loss. Okay, so lo mati amar le. So now he can't say to the funder, look what I did. I worked real hard. Dari mehaich pseida bahadai. Would you at least be able to split my initial loss together with me? You know, in other words, I worked really hard to get us back to zero. So can you at least split the leader loss with me? So he says, the Gemara, Rava says that you can't say that. Why? To which the fund, the capitalist can say to him, no, I'm not doing that with you. Meaning, let me tell you a little psychological insight. Why is it that you didn't share with me your leader loss? The reason why you didn't do that is because your reputation was at stake. And so all you did was work hard to get back to zero, to your starting point, just to spare yourself that reputation so that people would trust you with other merchandise. I don't need to share that leader loss with you. I don't have to burden that with you. You did that in order to preserve your own reputation, and so this is a you problem, not a me problem.
Have you told him that he's being responsible?
Sounds that way.
But why?
Basically...
Is it a one-contract venture?
Well, it doesn't... Right. In other words, the next part of the Gemara is going to talk about some sort of terms in terms of when the contract is going to be up. So here, I'm not sure. I don't know. Okay.
There was no schar.
No, he's not asking for schar. He's asking to share the loss.
You're back to zero. So
I understand. Right, now you're back to square one. But in other words, basically, you wanted to put a bookmark in other words, let's say you went from 100 down to 80. So let's put a bookmark there, meaning now we're at 80, and now I made $20. So let's at least share that. Okay, so the Gemara says he can't say that. Let's say over here we have two managing partners partnering together on the merchandise. And Rashi points out over here there was a date in which basically all monies and profits are going to go back to the capitalist and then we're going to all split it all. And now before we got to that date, basically, after a little bit of time where we turned the merchandise, we made money, now one of the managing partners says to the other one, let's just stop. Let's quit while we're ahead. And I amar le idach nirvach tvei. So now the other managing partner says, no, what do you mean quit while we're ahead? Let's not only be ahead, let's even get more ahead. Meaning, let's keep using the money, keep rolling, and keep making more money with this. So, dino hu dema'akev. So, the Gemara says, the right is within the managing partner who says, let's keep going forward. Because on this particular contract, it actually states, you're going to keep working the money until a certain point in time, and we haven't arrived at that time yet. V'yamalei havli palga deravcha. So, now let's say the managing partner who wants to back out says, okay, look, I want to back out. Give me half of the profits where we are right now. So which the other managing partner says, no, wait one second. In other words, we're going to go ahead now. We're going to hopefully make money, but we could also lose money. Now, your profits are going to be there in order to cover those losses. So you can't take your money out right now. In other words, you're in it for the, for better or for worse, you're in it. The Amalei Havli Paga Ravcho Pake Karna, and let's say the other managing partner who wants to dissolve the partnership at this point says, look, give me everything. Give me my profit, give me my, give me the principal. So Amalei Iska Lahada De Mishubad. So again, the other managing partner says, no, again, we're in this for the long haul. So your monies are in it, and for better or for worse. The Amarle Nifla Gravcha Vinifla Karna, the Amatalach Pseda de Darina Bahadach, and let's say the managing partner who wants to dissolve says, look, I'll take my money out, and in the event of a loss, you can come to me and I will help burden that loss. Amarle lo. Mazla de Betray Adif. And the other managing partner who wants to stay in until the end of the term of this particular contract can say to him, look, I got my mazel, I got your mazel. Our two mazalos together is going to create a better business relationship. Adkan.